and welcome to History Gap. I'm Georgia McAndrew.
And I'm Lucy Hunt. And this is a show that tells the stories of women throughout history.
Disclaimer, we're not historians, just two girls who love a good story.
Georgia, have you ever said Bloody Mary three times in a row in the mirror?
I think I've done it like a couple of times as a kid and been scared shitless.
What was the consequences?
Running away from the mirror as fast as I could, straight under the duvet.
And the reason being why you would do that is because Bloody Mary is a legend of a ghost who is said to appear in the mirror when her name is chanted three times. I don't think I ever had like the oomph about me to say it three times in the mirror. Like I think I was like, Bloody Mary, no, I'm not doing it.
No, gonna go.
Yeah. It was like a sleepover pastime.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where you're like, go on, you do it. No,
it was normally my brother. He'd be like, ooh, let's do it. Blah, blah, blah. And then we would always just be so scared. But I hate that horror movies have ruined mirrors.
It's so true.
I can't wash my face without thinking, God, if I pop up, is there going to be something there? It's going to be awful.
It's so true. I actually saw a TikTok as well that was like, you shouldn't have a mirror angled at the end of your bed because it invites like ghosts in.
I've had to
like re-angle all my mirrors just in case.
I've seen that. And also there's one about like your bed shouldn't face the door because it like welcomes death or something.
Oh, really? I've not seen that one.
my feng shui is all over the place because, quite frankly, London living doesn't allow for...
That's true, yeah.
...beds wherever you want to, because I live in a box.
So, yeah, the rumour is that a ghostly woman will appear in the mirror if everything goes to plan, saying it three times. Bloody Mary is sometimes alone, or sometimes holding a dead baby, apparently.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Legend states she'll do nothing but stare, but occasionally she'll leap from the glass and scratch you, or maybe even kill you. And there are also rumours that she might predict your future. So perhaps that's if she's in a good, goofy mood.
She's just a quirky gal.
Yeah.
Who knows what you're going to get?
You never know. It's a mixed bag with Mary. And basically, there's a lot of speculation about whether Bloody Mary, the ghostly tale, is based on a real person. But one name that does repeatedly come up in this speculation is Mary, the first Queen of England, who also shared the nickname of Bloody Mary.
Interesting. So,
do you know much about the real Bloody Mary?
No,
Georgia?
Well, the funny thing is, Lucy, is I was born and raised in a little land called Scotland. And
yeah.
They are, when I was in school, they didn't like teaching us about English history. I know literally nothing about English history, which is a shame because it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't know because I don't know much of it, but I'm sure it is really interesting. I know nothing about Bloody Mary.
So she was also known as Tudor Mary because it took place in Tudor times.
Yep.
And she is someone I probably did a history lesson or two on in the UK schools. Well, not UK, the British, English schools.
Uh-oh. Ah! Get into some dark water there.
And I'm going to just rewind a little bit. So her father is a man called Henry VIII. Do you know Henry VIII?
I have seen a musical called Six.
Yes. Yeah,
about wives.
Yes, and
that's,
exactly.
That's really as much as I know.
So he is famous for having six wives and creating the whole of the Church of England, literally to be able to divorce his first wife. Mm-hmm. He beheaded two wives, divorced another. One died in childbirth, and the last wife, finally, someone outlived him, in a quick summary.
He is making modern-day fuckboys not look so bad.
Yeah, I know. The London dating scene seems quite normal right now.
Getting ghosted? Fine. I don't mind it. I'll take it over that.
He got through this many wives as he was constantly disappointed by their inability to produce an heir. So you can imagine the type of household she grew up in might be a little bit complicated. But despite all of that, her and her father were very close.
Oh dear.
Probably because he could use her as a pawn in England's attempts to form stronger relationships with other countries. So she was promised to marry four times by her father, the first time being when she was just 2 years old.
I always just find it so weird how people just casually pimped out their daughters
Yeah.
And also their sons, didn't they? Because they really, they set things up really early.
Yeah. It was always a power play. Mm. It was always a exchange of wealth, power in some way.
Yeah.
She was well educated and held the Princess of Wales titles at one point. But Mary's world came crashing down when dear old daddy Henry VIII divorced her mother and sent her packing so he could remarry in hopes of producing a true heir. His new wife, Anne, wasn't a big fan of Mary, to say the very least. He had divorced his last wife, Mary's mother, under new terms from the Church of England, created by Henry, headed by Henry, surprisingly.
Seeing a lot of
signed
Henry.
Off by Henry.
Oh, yeah, that's all making sense now, yeah.
So Henry could have a divorce.
Oh, yeah, I see what he's done there.
It's a lot of effort, you know, to create a whole church just to get divorced. And the terms he basically was able to get this divorce under in this under the Church of England was that his first wife, Catherine, had been previously the partner of his deceased brother. So basically he was saying it was incestuous and therefore the marriage was annulled. But he knew that when he got with her. So yeah. People weren't happy about this.
It's like you're either okay with incest or you're not, Henry.
Obviously, the Pope did not approve of this, which is why he had to set up the whole Church of England. And obviously that caused tension. But he didn't give a flying sod.
Yeah. Henry does what he wants. I like just did not know that's how the Church of England came around. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Madness. So yeah, this cast Mary to the side and she never saw her mother again in person.
Oh.
But she did keep in secret communication to her, which was a great risk to Mary's life. But obviously she was very close to her mother. And her new stepmom made her live in fear of execution.
Classic case of the evil stepmother.
It was fairly short-lived though, as Anne, his new wife, soon fell out of favour with Henry. It was literally only a matter of time. He brought Mary back into the fold, and eventually, Henry gets a son. And Mary, she becomes his godmother. So, it's all a bit weird, really.
That is a bit weird.
Half-sister and his godmother. But it does make her a very important European princess once again.
Okay.
So, she is fully back in the fold now. So, it's been a very turbulent life.
Yeah, it's been... I think she's probably got some abandonment issues going on.
Yeah.
I would say.
And as things went in those days, Edward, Henry's son, succeeds the crown when Henry dies. And one of his big changes to the church is that he made it compulsory that English is spoken rather than Latin for all services. So he makes this big change. He's really young. I think he's about 9 when he comes to the throne when his dad dies. But this is something that they implement more or less straight away.
Does he just not like his Latin lessons?
I think they were trying to bring the Church of England forward. The Latin phrases were like more associated to the Pope and the Church of Rome, whereas they were trying to be like, we are the Church of England and we do our practice in English. They were just trying to like modernise, I suppose, in their eyes.
Got you.
Mary, however, thinks this is a crap idea.
Love it.
And she continues to celebrate Mass in Latin in her private chapel, being aware she could literally lose her head over this. Edward is not best impressed, and neither are his council.
Uh-oh.
Especially the Duke of Northumberland, who was a really close ally and led the government for Edward. And he plays a really big role in this story, I'll mention him later. But this creates a really rocky relationship between the half-siblings and results in years of frustrated letters and awkward conversations. It's a very unstable relationship, with one meeting ending in tears by both parties as they could not find common ground. They weren't getting on, to say the very least. But a few years later, Edward gets sick.
Oh no. I think I see where this is going.
Yeah.
Back in the day, when anyone gets ill, you're like...
Yeah.
It's a grab. Yeah.
So Edward gets sick, and in his will, he writes that another woman, Lady Jane Grey, is set to take over the throne with her sons. So skipping Mary, who would have been the natural successor.
Oh, so he writes them as successors as opposed to Mary.
Exactly. Mary catches wind of this plan, somehow unknown, and skips town, arriving at a friend's house for the night. She leaves the next day to attend Mass and leaves the facility, and men from the King's Council, I believe the Northumberland man I mentioned earlier, burnt down the house as a warning signal. Do not assist Mary.
Burned down her friend's house?
Yep.
Oh, savage.
She wrote to the council demanding she should be declared queen and assuring them of forgiveness if they behaved themselves immediately, which is giving, like, you know, mum vibes, isn't it? If you behave yourselves immediately, I won't sit you on the naughty step. But yeah. they weren't having it. They were not having it. Whilst being on the outside of the fold, sort of travelling around different areas of England, she managed to build a strong group of supporters, and people did begin to question, well, hold on a minute, what about the original daughter of our King Henry? And Mary is like, yeah, what about me? And
she's making a comeback.
Yeah, she's like, I'm not having it, actually.
Yeah.
A Lincolnshire man actually wrote to the council in his support.
Her Grace should have her rights, or else there would be the bloodiest day that ever was in England.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. And basically, the council said, we don't want this smoke.
Mm.
Yeah, and they were like, oof. Okay, yeah. These people are getting quite serious about
this. They're serious. Yeah.
That's in a summary, to be fair. But they did basically do that. And Mary rode into London into a supporting crowd where people began rejoicing her decision as queen instead. It's not looking good for Lady Jane Grey, as basically she thought she was on her way to get coronated, and actually she came back into this chaos you know, Mary's back in town and you're getting plopped off to the side. So
she started from the bottom, but she's still at the bottom.
She is.
I hate to see it.
Hate to
R.I.P. Jane Grey.
Literally. So in return, she does behead.
Oh, right.
Yeah, she gets beheaded. Mary didn't actually really want to behead her friend Jane, but she just proved too much of a threat to Mary's bigger mission. So in one clean stroke, she was beheaded on Tower Green, which is next to Tower of London we know today.
Imagine, like, actually, you know when you're, like, at primary school and you'd be like, someone was mean to you and you'd be like, you're not coming to my birthday party.
Yeah.
Instead, they're like, I'm going to behead you, bitch, if you say this one more time. It's actually crazy.
Take that.
It's crazy that was acceptable behaviour.
But what's interesting, actually, is it got me thinking about the Tower of London and how people were legit executed there.
Mm-hmm.
But executions inside the tower was a privileged reserve for those of high rank, or for those who had dangerously strong support by the public to keep them away from gawping crowds. So in total, only 10 people were beheaded on Tower Green, which is west of the White Tower, which is the main tower you see when you look at the Tower of London. And the first two were the previous wives of her father, Henry VIII, and Jane was actually the third person to ever be beheaded there.
Wow. I mean, I guess that's kind of nice. For Jane, I'm really struggling to find a silver lining for Jane. Like, you know, she got a little private beheading.
As Mary came into her own power, obviously she was unmarried, she's a single gal, she's got no children. And she's very keen on the Church of Rome's way of life. It was very clear that under her reign, England would sort of revert back into a Catholic country.
Do you think, like, at the time, being, like, a peasant who lived under all of this, you were like, oh, could we just pick a religion and stick with it? Like, this is so annoying.
Yeah. You'd be like, come on, make up your mind. I mean, there was obviously some people who felt passionate
about of course,
both, either or. But especially because it'd been, like, it was recent history that the Church of England had come in.
Yeah.
And also, you would know, like, you would know why the Church of England came in the first place. So you'd probably just be like, for God's sake, like, we've only just got used to this one. In her quest to make England a Catholic country once again, she set out to marry a Spanish king, Philip II, which pissed a lot of people off and started a little rebellion from an English soldier. But Mary soon sorted that out and married her Spanish king anyway. This made her both Queen of England and Queen of Spain. It wasn't that long after she got married that she began to earn her title of Bloody Mary.
God, you know, it's like when you're dating and it's like the real person comes out after 3 months. It's like
that's
the
true
Tudor version of that.
And as these changes started to roll out, there were rebels against the system of all these changes. And people weren't really a fan of everything being too strict. But obviously, because she specifically had a vision in mind, which was her ambition when she became queen, she was very adamant that it was going to be her way or the highway. And she began burning rebels that disobeyed her orders at the stake. In total, she killed over 300 people in her 5-year reign.
Wow.
In depictions of the executions, crowds would gather round to watch. Wood logs would be piled around the religious rebels as they were tied to large wooden poles. The crowds would stay to hear the screams and watch the burning of flesh in this slow and torturous way to die. Despite the crowd, these executions were largely unpopular throughout England and created anti-Catholic sentiments throughout the country. But she continued to do so anyway.
Yeah, I wonder if she ever lay in bed at night and was like, phew, wow, I'm responsible for 300 people dying.
No, I don't think so. I'm not getting that vibe. But yeah, this is where the nickname comes in. I don't know. Maybe she did. Maybe she considered it.
I don't know, because 300 people is so many, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's either like she really didn't care, or she just got to the point where she'd already killed
a few people,
so just kept going and couldn't stop.
If you think about how she grew up and having that kind of father that was treating his closest partners like that,
yeah,
I think you just must become so dehumanized towards others.
Of course.
I think she saw it probably as like a logistical problem rather than a human problem. Mm. And she probably just Mary, I have no idea what you're thinking, but she was probably just disattaching herself to the reality of what she was doing.
No, it's a great point. I guess if you're growing up in a historical period where the answer to most solutions is violence and murder, and most political things are solved by violence and murder, and also if you're a woman who's kind of being pulled in and out of the monarchy or whatever, and bargained here or there, your probably value on human life and it's probably not where it should be.
Despite her best efforts to do so, she never had any children, resulting in no heirs. And she had 2 false pregnancies where she and medical staff believed she was pregnant, but she was not. After 5 years on throne, influenza struck England, people died in their thousands, and the Queen fell very sick. She had made her will in hope of bearing children, but knowing that it was now impossible, she added a section, not specifically naming her half-sister, but referring to her as, by the law and the statutes of the realm. So, proper sass. She didn't want to name her sister in the will. She was like, if it has to be her.
Yeah, if no one else is free and available, then fine. She was the first woman to be crowned Queen of England and rule the country in her own right.
So every queen before this point had been through marriage. So there had been previous queens of England, but she was the first one who was crowned as a queen in her own right.
Cool.
She also loved to gamble. And one time, she actually ran out of cash and she asked her servants to provide her with more money and they refused. So in desperation to continue betting, she bet against breakfast the next day. And this is basically logged in the books, betting books, yeah. She's also potentially, again, this is another potential, this is where all the history gets blurry, but she potentially is the inspiration for the nursery rhyme, Mary, Mary, quite contrary.
Yes, do you know what? I think I've maybe heard that was maybe about her.
I also loved your take of asking if Bloody Mary, the drink, was about her.
Are they drinking Bloody Marys back then?
I don't think they had Tabasco.
Oh, that's a shame. I would kind of love it if she, part of Mary's legacy was, creating a cocktail.
So you've been listening to History Gap.
We should mention that some of our dialogue has been dramatised based on historical research, as we can't always know the exact wording. I'm Georgia McAndrew.
And I'm Lucy Hunt, and we brought you History Gap.
We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Please leave us a comment in the reviews and let us know if there's a story you'd love us to cover.
Follow along and we'll see you very soon.
See you there.
See you soon.